are back with more of Lake Effect Weekend on 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North. Bronzeville was one of Milwaukee's early African-American neighborhoods. From restaurants and jazz clubs to other thriving Black-owned small businesses, Bronzeville in its heyday was a hub of African-American culture in the city. For a long time, it was also the only neighborhood in Milwaukee where African-Americans were allowed to live. And because the citizens there didn't have much, if any, representation in city or county government, it was also the neighborhood that was raised to make way for Interstate 43. But the people there are resilient, and the neighborhood is trying to make a comeback. Remembering Bronzeville is a new documentary that's airing on Milwaukee Public Television. It showcases the people and the history of the place. Its creators, Karen Slattery and Mark DeRemus, join me in the studio now. Karen and Mark, it's great to have you with us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
So where did the idea to make Remembering Bronzeville come from? Was there one thing that you said, we've got to make this film? Or was it many things?
It was many things. I used to drive back and forth, obviously, through I-43 north side. So I saw the situation. And then we discovered there's this whole other story that neither of us had ever been aware of. And that was courtesy of a friend of ours.
Sherry Williams Pinnell was the writer and director of the play Welcome to Bronzeville for First Stage Theater, and she had invited us to watch her as she was working through the process, and we heard some of the stories of the people she talked to and thought, oh, wouldn't it be interesting to do the backstory, because her play focused on a family in Bronzeville in the 1950s. And so we decided to do oral histories with people who grew up in the area. Marquette University, where I work, underwrote much of the cost of the work. And we gave everybody the same questions and then put it all together and looked for themes, patterns. And we thought, you know, let's do this as a video so that the information that we find out is available, it's accessible to the broader public, as opposed to being a research project in a journal.
Right, that five people see. Exactly.
Although we never anticipated broadcast at the time.
I love the way you incorporate the old photographs, because for those of us who either weren't around then or didn't grow up in the area, you know, to see what you're talking about and kind of superimpose that with what's there now really brings home the devastating changes that happened to that neighborhood.
Right.
And I'll take credit for uncovering some of those photographs that hadn't been seen in decades at the Housing Authority.
I was going to ask where
right.
they came from.
Well,
were they the Historical Society? So they
yes,
were the Housing
we had,
Authority. Yeah.
Sure. We had conventional sources like the Milwaukee County Historical Society, the Wisconsin Black Historical Society, and so on. You know, Milwaukee Public Library actually has quite a few photographs. Paul Geenan, give a shout out in his book. He was very gracious about sharing and some of his photographs that he had collected from individuals from out of personal collections. But also the Housing Authority. At the time, back in the late 40s, early 50s, they were the redevelopment authority also for the city. And so they had sent people out to take pictures of pretty much everything as an inventory. And I don't remember how I tumbled to the fact that they had this collection, but it was all in boxes in the basement. So I spent quite a few days just digging through there. And that stuff hasn't been seen before, so I'm proud that we found that.
Did you find that people were willing to talk? I mean, not to put too blunt a point on it, but, you know, you're two white people
right, exactly.
doing a story about Bronzeville. And so did people that you spoke to who grew up there, was there any pushback or were people anxious to tell the story?
They were very anxious to tell the story. And we used what's called a snowball sample. And you find somebody who points you to somebody else who points you to somebody else. And I remember one evening we were talking to Martha Freeman. She has a ministry, and it's in a storefront. And we were done with the interview and taking the video. And she said, come on, there's somebody else I want you to meet. And she took us down the block to Monk Campbell, who's the barber. So you knew people who knew people. That's how you had to find the folks to talk to. But
But people were willing and, anxious.
Very willing. And you'd ask them a question, what was it like going to school in Bronzeville when you were young? And they were often running. I mean, people like to remember their childhoods.
I think if you go into an interview with an open heart, people recognize that. And our job was to listen and learn and not put our gloss over their stories. And so that's what we tried to do as journalists. It's not about me. It's not about my story. It's not about what I think. It's about what they remember and what they want others to remember.
Well, and some of the stories, you know, like any place, you know, there's funny stories, there's mm-hmm. poignant stories. There's just every day, you know, my mother getting us to come back for dinner kind of mm-hmm. stories. Mm-hmm. And that was something that in the hour that you had to tell this story, you managed to capture all of that.
I
appreciated that too. And it makes me want to go, even though I don't need a barber, it makes me want to go and talk to him and mm-hmm. and talk to the various people who are still around. What did Sherry think after you put the film together?
She thought it was even-handed and was very supportive. And yes, she did see it. We had a showing for people who had been in the film to see, you know, let them see it, see what their reaction
and they
was.
Were, and they were happy
they
with
were
it?
Positive,
yes,
yeah.
That's really the most important thing, obviously. Do they feel like we told their story or conveyed their story in an accurate and sensitive way? And I got a wonderful call last night from Norma Jean Sims saying, oh, I loved it. I saw it again. I loved it. And that's really what counts. As long as they feel it was good treatment, that's what
now,
counts.
Do you feel that you did it justice as filmmakers and as journalists?
We hope we did. We hope we did. That's what you always hope for. And so when people give you that kind of feedback, you say, okay, I think we got it. And that's what we were after.
Was there anything you had to leave out for time constraints that you wish you could have left in?
There were a lot of things.
Lots of good stories.
I think one of the interesting things was that we did not get in there, but there were complaints that when their property was taken from them for these public projects, they didn't get a fair payment.
Right. And there were some homeowners in the areas that were affected by initially the public housing projects and later redevelopment.
And the freeway.
Right.
And so the legislature passed a law in the 70s saying that if you're going to use people's property, take it for public projects, you have to pay them fairly.
Fair value
right.
for
right.
what
and
it is.
And also help them with relocation and things like that. The freeway in particular, there was no provision to help people find another place to live if they were dislocated. In fact, Reuben Harpole said that he got moved twice, right? His family got moved twice, first for Hillside and then for the freeway. And sure. I'm guessing that's not unusual.
Yeah, and one of the things towards when you were talking about the freeway and how it just sort of raised the neighborhood, and I think it was Rocky Marcoux who was saying that it probably made a lot more sense to put it closer to the lake, but those neighborhoods were wealthier and white and mm-hmm. weren't going to kindly take to that. Mm-hmm. And there would be a lot more pushback
right.
from the citizenry. And so you already have a disadvantaged population who doesn't really have a lot of power.
Right.
And when was it that African Americans could finally move outside of Bronzeville? It was pretty late, right?
Right. There was the Civil Rights Act in 1968 and a parallel city ordinance that purportedly made housing open to all. But of course, there's a residual attitudes that continue really.
Yeah, the redlining is maybe not on the books anymore, but it's still
right.
in people's attitudes. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. And that was something that came through very clearly
yeah.
in the film.
It did.
Have you made friends now?
Oh, yes. Yes, we have. Yes, we have. And delightful people they are.
Yes. And we try to bring folks when we can. To appearances like Fred Reed and Harry Oden. I think they've both been very supportive.
Do you think you have another film about it in you, or have you pretty much done it in this film as far as you're concerned as the creators?
I think for now
we'll... Maybe not a film. We are looking for opportunities to collaborate and have the materials placed in exhibits and things like that where they'll be available.
I was going to say, those photographs, those should be available for people to see.
Well, I think they are, but in different places.
And now, isn't Marquette?
Marquette is going to have in their archives all of the videos that we did, the interviews, which were cut down for the film, certainly.
Sure.
They'll have the complete interviews in their archives.
So those will be available. But I love the idea of having an exhibit of at least some of the photographs along with a showing of the film, along with people who were in the film there to answer questions. I mean, and kind of take it around as maybe a traveling exhibit or something. Mm-hmm. I think it would be really, really interesting and cool. And the other thing, the hopeful part that you mentioned towards the end of the film is that there is a sense of trying to rebuild at least what's left.
People are trying to do that. And it's been an ongoing process since, around 2006, I think. And I think it's really about capturing the spirit of what was going on there. And truly, it was, a neighborhood in a city of neighborhoods. And so I think we need to recognize that and pay attention.
Yeah, I think people are doing it in the arts, certainly. Mm-hmm. City is trying to do something on North Avenue that would be sort of reminiscent of the scene on Walnut Street back in the day.
Yeah, all of those wonderful jazz clubs
restaurants, taverns.
Yep. And as you point out in the film, it was interracial.
Yes. You know,
white people came
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely. That was the place to go for jazz and blues and a nightlife that was not necessarily available elsewhere. So yes, black and tans, they called them. The Flame, the Moon Glow in particular. The Pelican Club, the Congo Room, those had a mixed crowd. And the record stores, Shorty Moore's Bop Shop, the white teenagers from Shorewood would come down and they would listen to the records, listen to that music. It was a place where some of the usual practices were set aside.
Music and food often tend to be leveling factors.
Right.
You know?
But the sad part was that the African-American entertainers who'd come to the city weren't allowed to stay in the city's hotels. So there was that racial bar that was still...
Yeah. Which we tend to think of as only a Southern issue. Yeah. And
it was not.
Yeah. It,
there were definite rules. But the good news was then the... big-name entertainers would come to Bronzeville after hours and jam with the local musicians till dawn or later. So it created a scene that was fun for people who were there.
I was going to say, when I was watching the film, I was thinking, that's the part I wish I was around for.
Yeah.
Because I love jazz and I love music. And the idea of being able to see Duke Ellington just hanging out and playing the piano
yes.
in somebody's tavern,
right, right.
you know. It's just like, yeah.
He loved the Flame. He was a regular there and showed up for their anniversary. I think it was in 1957. He wanted to be there.
And these entertainers stayed with people in Bronzeville. And how much fun that would have been to have somebody like that stay at your house.
Yeah. Well, Fred Reed told that story, right, about how his mom worked in a beauty parlor and he would see big name entertainers, famous people come in to get a manicure.
Right.
And he'd stand outside and look in the window.
So I know it's being shown on Milwaukee Public Television. Do you know what's next?
We're also hoping to make it available locally for groups that would like to see it. And we've had some invitations already.
We have some people who have contacted us through the website asking if they can show the film, you know, in a small group or...
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
and so you have individual, but also take it into schools and and that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right, make it available for young people.
Yes, I would love to watch a young audience react to the film. That's one of the things I'm looking forward to, sitting with some young people and seeing what they say.
Well, I want to thank you for making the film, and I want to thank you both for coming in to tell us about it. Karen and Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Karen Slattery and Mark DeRemus co-produced the documentary Remembering Bronzeville. There are a number of showings of the film on Milwaukee Public Television, and there's a link to the complete schedule at wuwm.com.